WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Israel's military says it has positioned 35 battalions surrounding Gaza from where Hamas launched its Saturday attack. CBS News' Holly Williams in Tel Aviv has the latest.
The militants fired more barrages of rockets today, hitting the city of Ashkelon in southern Israel. The country's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, promised his people they would have vengeance.
Hamas will understand that by attacking us, they've made a mistake of historic proportions. We will exact a price that will be remembered by them and Israel's other enemies for decades to come.
The White House says at least 14 Americans have been killed, and there are also Americans among those taken hostage. Hamas says it won't hold any negotiations over the hostages that it's holding while it's under fire. Some of the support provided from the U.S. to Israel will include ammunition and interceptors to replenish the Iron Dome. CBS's Nora O'Donnell in Tel Aviv.
The president of the United States stating clearly that the United States stands behind Israel and denouncing the acts of terror as sheer evil, going into specifics about the number of civilians who have been slaughtered, in his words, babies, women raped and paraded, in the president's words.
Feds accused Republican New York Congressman George Santos of defrauding people who donate to his campaign. A new 23-count indictment alleges he committed identity theft and credit card fraud. CBS's Nicole Killian.
We are in the midst of a very heated speaker's race where every vote is going to count. Santos said that he does not intend to resign, but we know obviously there have been calls upon him to do so even prior to this whole speaker's race that is underway. But that does add another dynamic to things.
Two Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies are in critical but stable condition after an explosion and fire at a training facility north of L.A. The cause of today's fire is under investigation. Found in a Chicago warehouse, nearly $5 million of stolen shoes. CBS Chicago reporter Andrew Ramos.
There was no shortage of brands, Nikes, Adidas, Supreme, and then some. And it didn't stop at footgear.
50 pieces in each box.
This warehouse in Austin not only serving up trends, but now the site of an investigation where law enforcement officials say a group of thieves used it as a home base to push stolen merchandise received through a series of railroad cargo thefts across the country.
Another strong earthquake has shaken part of western Afghanistan, where a quake on Saturday killed more than 2,000 people. Today's magnitude earthquake was outside the capital of Herat province. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Howler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pin still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pin still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. my way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Time out!
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Todd Alba Show.
You can't impeach someone before they've committed an alleged crime. Even principled conservatives are going to look at that action and say, come on, what's going on?
The Todd Alba Show.
Dan Knodel, Republican of Germantown, said he was moving forward to uphold his quote-unquote constitutional duty, which is a joke.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Or cafelatte.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, didn't cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
They are, Robert. This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis.
Hey, let's lead off right away here. We got a guest. We want to rock and roll and get the word out here right away of what's happening here on Turtle Island and specifically here in the state of Minnesota. And we have the director of the Native American Initiative at the Minnesota History Center, Dr. Amber Annis. Welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Yeah, well, there's some exciting news happening at the Minnesota History Center, and I want to start talking about that and get people excited as I am. And I meant Historical Society.
Absolutely, the Minnesota Historical Society. We are getting ready for the opening of our new exhibit, Reframing Our Stories. It opens on October 21st, next Saturday, and it'll have a run for 2 years. And we're really excited about this exhibit because it is the first in a series of rotating exhibits that we will be producing out of Native American initiatives. We really think of this gallery space as a community gallery space, and we're really looking forward to the future exhibits where we're partnering more with Native communities and really starting from that place of what does your story look like? What do you want to see here in this exhibit?
So I'm not too far off when I said the Minnesota History Center, it's with the Minnesota Historical Center, and it's going to be happening at the History Center.
Absolutely. So the Minnesota Historical Society, right, also represents our historic sites. But we also say the Minnesota History Center, and that's for the building here in St. Paul with the museum and our archives and library and collections and our many exhibits.
So let's talk about our home Native Minnesota. Let's talk about this powerful exhibit you're about to have.
So our home, Native Minnesota, it is our permanent exhibit that we have at the History Center. That exhibit opened up right around COVID, so it did not get the glorious opening that we were hoping for. So we've slowly been bringing folks in. This exhibit, Reframing Our Stories, again, is a companion piece to that exhibit. And this started about, I'd say, a year and a half ago when curators in our collections department finally started to sort through a series of photographs and historical newspapers that we had acquired from the Star Tribune. within these archives, within these collections, there were several folders that had negatives and photos in folders that were labeled Indians. So when they finally started going through those files, they looped in the Native American Initiatives Department, the folks that worked in our collections area, and had us come downstairs just to see, you know, they wanted us to be aware of some of these images. And we all went downstairs and they revealed the most amazing photographs. All of us were just in awe at some of these photographs, and the images really ranged from the 20s to the 90s. But this exhibit is very particular from the 50s to about the 90s that we're focusing on.
Yeah, you guys were tabling at a lot of Native American events, and it was really kind of really cool how you did that, where you had these pictures printed out, and it was almost like, do you know who these people are? And because, like you said, they were just a lot of them were just written down as Indians or how whoever or whatever the thing was. So that was like a really pretty brilliant way to do it. And it was fun going through it. It was fun watching other people go through it and find people they knew. That was pretty exciting just in the beginning kickoff.
Oh, that was, yeah, those community events were some of the best. There were so many images and it was a little overwhelming to think about how do we condense all of this into an exhibit. So essentially, we just said, let's take all the images, put them into booklet forms, and let's just go out and start tabling. And that's where the real stories started to emerge, the real experiences. You know, it was so wonderful to be at events and to see folks sitting around with coffee and remembering this story or this image. And they'd put a little post-it and provide a name or provide maybe perhaps the descendant or someone who was a relative of the person. And it's also where we got a lot of our ideas for themes and for some of the language, some of the words that you see or that you'll see around the exhibit.
Yeah, I saw a picture of a name I look familiar, and they were broadcasting on radio. It was a Ho-Chunk, and that blew my mind. I took that picture right away to see to find out more about that, but it's all in our blood, I guess, the people of the Sacred Voice here, the Ho-Chunks.
Well, let me tell you, that's one of my favorite stories, Robert. So that image you're talking about is Henry Green Crow and Sam Blackwell, and I'm forgetting the other gentleman's name, but they all ran the American Indian Radio show in the 70s. And so in this process of outreach, we met Bonnie Claremont, who used to be Bonnie Green Crow. And Bonnie is Henry's sister. And so we actually just completed an interview a few weeks with Bonnie. And that's exactly what she said. She said, you know, Ho-Chunk is the people of the big voice with the loud voice. And that's exactly who Henry was. And it was a philosophy that she said that if you have something to say, you better say it big and you better say it well.
Well, what's really exciting, too, to hear the name Claremont, too, is that they're huge in our Native American neighborhoods here and the West Side. And I know they do a lot and have been for many years for the community. So the Claremonts are way up there on us, too. And we're all related. So we all might have different names, but we're all related.
You know, and that brings to another point that we really are excited about this exhibit is that these stories, these images that kind of lived in these folders that were just called Indians, we were able to take them and exactly what you said, you know, we were then led to Bonnie Claremont, and Bonnie was able to share not only stories of her brother, but of herself and her family. And now we're able to share that with community more. So a big part of this is putting emphasis on all the amazing folks that have, you know, lived in the Twin Cities, that have paved the road for all of us, you know, younger Native folks to come through. And we really wanted to highlight those voices.
Hey, we're here with Dr. Amber Annis, and she's the director of the Native American Initiative at the Minnesota Historical Society. And I have to say something. There's a big play coming at the Guthrie this week for a couple of weeks. Yeah. Oh, hey, Haley put up the sign. One of the things that it was talking about Lake Street as being one of are one of the areas. But wow, we really have a big, richer story than that. I mean, the Claremonts are from the west side. The Native Americans here in St. Paul were big time in Frogtown. You know, people forget that as time goes on, but, geez, you know, we had some strong communities here in St. Paul, along with Minneapolis.
You know, another part of this exhibit is thinking about the story that you just told and the expansiveness of the histories and the stories here. We also have this call to community input, community input for us. Let's make sure that, you know, when you're in this space and perhaps the story of the Claremonts or the Green Crows might, you know, it makes you think of another story, and you want to make sure that we know that. So we really are, we're also providing a space where people can come in and provide more information. And we really think about this as community collaborative. And also, the exhibit is not permanent or fixed. So we're looking forward to stories that come in that we can add to the exhibit as it's on its 2-year run.
That's exciting. Hey, let's talk a little more. We got to take a quick break, but I think it's really exciting that it's a really organic kind of thing, because people, you hear stories. I keep on hearing stories about my family that I didn't know, and I'm 62 years old, so it's exciting. And this is the place to be, the Minnesota Historical Society, to have things like that forever, for all of us to go back and look at our family. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Be a vaccinative. As the fall season continues, new COVID-19 variants threaten the health of not just you, but our elders as well. These new variants might even evade previous vaccines. That's why it's important to stay up to date. The newly authorized vaccines target current variants effectively and are FDA approved for ages 6 months and older. But there is an important note. These are the first COVID vaccines to be commercialized, which means there may be costs associated with them. Speak with your health insurer about your coverage before scheduling an appointment to avoid a surprise bill. For those without health insurance, help is available. Ask your health clinic about options or visit vaccines.gov for free locations. Getting vaccinated protects you from severe disease. Don't put yourself or elders at risk. So be a vaccinative and protect our community. You can visit vaccines.gov for free vaccine locations.
This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Getting bus and train information in your language just got easier. Customers who call Metro Transit at 612-373-3333 are able to select language options at the start of the call. Access Next Trip, their automated real-time schedule information tool, and other Metro Transit assistance by calling 612-373-3333. For more information about other transit informational tools, visit metrotransit.org/tools.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Guthrie Theater. Speaking of the Guthrie Theater, we have 2 tickets to give out for their new program, For the People. This showing, the tickets will be for the Thursday, October 19th showing at 7:30 p.m. Again, this is For the People at the Guthrie Theater. Call right now to win those pair of tickets. Robert, do we have that number?
Hey, I got it memorized. 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. Are you taking the first caller?
Let's do the first one.
Right on. Hey, we are here. Hey, that's a good read, too, that we're giving away tickets. And we're here with Dr. Amber Annis, and she's the director of the Native American Initiative at the Minnesota Historical Society. And we're talking about, well, we're talking about the Minnesota Historical Society, but we're also talking about this new exhibit called Framing Our Stories, which opens October 21st. And it's at it's a new exhibit at the Minnesota History Center. And I just got to say this, Doctor, is that Native Roots Radio is going to be there, too.
Oh, we are so excited that Native Roots Radio will be going live that day. We're so excited because it's so powerful to think that part of this exhibit is really highlighting, Native representation in photojournalism and in media throughout the decades, and how oftentimes that is presented from a non-Native perspective. And so for us to sort of take, and that's where reframing our stories came from, as we were looking through these images and connecting them to the newspaper article that they came with, it was then, of course, came in with all the stereotypes and assumptions. There were, of course, Native journalists. Gerald Bisner was one of them, who did a few of the great stories. But for the most part, it was non-Native journalists. And so that was the big part, right? I mean, seeing that perspective from non-Natives.
And what I like, too, is that you talked about this earlier is a community involvement. So this is very organic. If you see somebody or if you know a story about one of the pictures or something in the exhibit, you can I imagine you can write it down or let somebody know. Or how's that work? Is there like a pad there how do you do that?
Absolutely. We'll have an email option available. We'll have a spot that folks are able to write down their stories or reach out to any of us in Native American initiatives to help share those stories. But also over the course of the 2 years, we'll be having lots of different community events, inviting more folks into the space, into the exhibit to continue, how we originally started.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I know just as things trickle down, whether it's an old video somebody posts, I'll see my grandfather, Howard McKee Jr., and then I'll see my grandmother. And they were very involved in the 70s and 60s in St. Paul. So it's going to be exciting to see who's out there because, again, we joke about this, but we're all related. So it'll be fun to see our relatives maybe in a younger pose or something that you never knew they did, or just, being around a drum or being at a powwow, so it sounds really, really exciting. And let's give the dates and the time again so everyone listening can, or the date and the time and then where the exhibit is again.
Absolutely. So Reframing Our Stories is at the Minnesota Historical Society in St. Paul. The opening date is October 21st, and it has a 2-year run. It'll close in 2025 of October. Saturday, October 21st, we're also having an opening reception from 11 a.m. to 2. It's a free opening reception. This exhibit opening during the course of its 2 years run will be free to Native community members. We're going to have food and welcome and speakers. And of course, so excited, Native Roots Radio will be going live to help share some of the stories and hear from some of the community members we talked to as well.
I really like that picture that was on that. I was looking at that picture, and we have like 5 Natives in the back seat of a big old, big old Chrysler. But you can tell by the hairdo, it's probably like a Beatlesque 60s, early 60s. We got the Beatle haircut, and they're having a great time. And we all know us Natives with our inside jokes. I'm sure they're laughing about some things that maybe some people wouldn't understand, but they definitely do. There's a lot of joy in that picture.
Oh, you said it right there, joy. That is exactly what we want folks to feel when they come into that space is joy, because that's how we felt going through these images. That photo right there, we call it the Dairy Queen photo because all the kids were on their way to Dairy Queen. But, just the laughter and the humanity and the resiliency that all these photos show, we know people are going to be telling stories and memories will be shared. It's just, we're really hopeful for creating a space of continuing, these stories that sort of sat in these folders, right?
Exactly. You know, you got a lot of input and opinions from a lot of several Native community members across Minnesota. And that is so important, too, because, you know, there's 11 recognized tribes in Minnesota, along with all us other urban Indians, too. So to reach out to that many people is very important, because we don't want to be pan-Indians to ourselves either. So I really applaud you for that.
Absolutely. You know, that was, again, it was key. It's hard to do that. You know, I mean, it really is hard. You try as much as you can to get community voice and input, and you go out to community and events. And at some point, you're always feeling like you're leaving someone out, which is why, as I said earlier, this is nothing that's fixed. It's a two-year run, but we're excited for the changes that can be made, for anything new that's coming in, and just for folks to come in and see that they were heard, see that their voices, you know, mattered when they were providing stories, and see themselves represented.
So are there a lot of pitchers that still don't have a story to them yet? Is that fair to say?
So a lot of what's interesting about some of these is one of the things we'll also be highlighting is the photo, is the negatives that come with the image. So mm-hmm. oftentimes a story will emerge in the newspaper and the photographer will take a series of photos, but then choose that one image that makes sense for the story. However, when you go into those negatives, the other images reveal such a larger story. And if it's coming from that non-Native perspective, we can see why certain images were picked. We can understand mm-hmm. why. So what we're trying to do is highlight these other images, make community member aware. But there are a few photos that we're going to also highlight where we don't have the names of family members. They were just Indians in the stories, or they were just Indian family or Indian boy. And a lot of the times, too, as we're seeing, there's no names of women. It was just Mr. And then, you know, her name was her husband's name.
Yeah. Wow. Good point there. Jeez. Talk about erasure, right?
Absolutely.
Do you see, and you don't have to answer this if you don't know, but do you see after the 2 years that a possible book would come out? Because that would be really amazing to have a picture book. And I know with Ho-Chunk, we have a book of all these pictures. And I see my great-great-grandfather in there. And because there was a photographer in Wisconsin Dells that taking pictures of Indians. And so they had pictures of Native Americans from the 30s to the 50s. And so they published a book about 10, 15 years ago. But we were able to see our relatives and point them out.
Absolutely, we do. That is, you know, an outcome of this. You know, our first sort of publication will be through the Minnesota History Magazine that's focusing on this exhibit and a few images. But a part of this also is because our resources are so vast, the archives, the collections, a lot of community members don't know, right? They don't know what we do have here. We're hoping that this exhibit sparks a lot of interest and research for community members to come in and see what we have and want to dig a little further. And perhaps that does lead to a book, which is what our goal is, another right. goal of ours. Perhaps that leads to articles, more research from community members coming in and researching our own stories.
Yeah, this is very cool. And I think one of the important things, too, is sometimes the Minnesota Historical Society has a bad taste with our relatives, but to have a red carpet, so to speak, a welcoming, and someone to come talk to, like yourself and your staff, we can knock some walls down and really celebrate the things that you do have and are preserving for our community.
Absolutely. And that's what we're looking forward to, is that you're right. You know, I mean, a lot of folks do have that idea, and they do have that that feeling towards the Historical Society. But we're working very hard, you know, to make sure that community members know that there is representation here, that the resources that we're stewards of, the cultural patrimony, the historic sites, we are stewards of them, and community members have a right to be here, and they deserve to understand and know and see these resources.
Absolutely. Hey, Doctor, one more time, the date and the time, if you don't mind.
Sure. Opening, Reframing Our Stories, October 21st at the Minnesota Historical Society. We'll be having an opening reception from 11 to 2.
Thank you so much. We'll see you there. And thank you for your time and all you're doing, really, for the community. It's we lose our history in a lot of ways, and this is a way to regain who we are and where we come from and who we're related to, too. So I'm excited to come down and see all this.
Absolutely. Palami, I appreciate you all.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Special Report. 4 days after Hamas militants attacked Israel, both sides trade rocket fire along the Gaza border. Israel reports more than 1,000 deaths and more than 2,000 injured. The Gaza Health Ministry says 900 people have died there and at least 4,500 have been wounded. CBS's Holly Williams in Tel Aviv.
I think it's rocked people's sense of security. Some people have told us that they no longer feel safe in their own homes. This is a part of the world that's no stranger to violence. But for many Israelis, this just feels very different.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken travels to Israel tomorrow as part of a diplomatic effort to contain the crisis. CBS's Ed O'Keefe at the White House.
A major fear among allies that Iranian-backed Hezbollah could fully join the fight. The president today issued this warning.
Anyone thinking of taking advantage of the situation, I have one word. Don't. Don't.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Buck Tussle has been providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin before it was cool. Now we're celebrating the company and the bug that started it all. In honor of our mascot, Buford's birthday, and the anniversary of our company, we are giving new customers free service until 2024, and 5 current customers will win $1,000 each. For more details and to get Bug Tussle internet today, call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the 2 oldest sanction lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pin still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The 5th and 6th generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pin still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This
Cafe
isn't an ad
Latte
to scare
is unlike
you,
any restaurant you've ever experienced. Grab a tray and pick from their award-winning selections of soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Cafe Latte, Victoria Street and Grand Avenue in St. Paul, or CafeLatte.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Strong Hearts Native Helpline. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Join Strong Hearts Native Helpline CEO Lori Jump for a virtual event, Let's Talk Empowerment, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on October 17, 2023. Join us for this special online event featuring Lori Jump as she leads an engaging and enlightening conversation on the pressing issue of domestic and sexual violence within Native communities. This event will delve into the crucial intersection between these forms of violence and the significance of culturally specific services and resources. Strong Hearts Native Helpline, free, confidential, anonymous, 24/7. Call or text 1-844-762-8483. That's 1-844-7-NATIVE. Or chat online at www.strongheartsnativehelpline.org.
Hey, before we get to our guest, Haley, I hear rumors we have a winner for these tickets, and going to the Guthrie is always an experience. Do you have their name?
Yes. So congratulations, Selena Bernier. You will be going to the Guthrie Theaters for the People on Thursday. Congratulations.
Yeah, I can't wait. And rumor has it, we're going to have Wes Studi on our show too soon. But don't tell anyone. We don't want to get people too excited. And they'll have to listen every day to figure out which day that's going to happen. Ho-wah. Hey, we got a young warrior here, a language warrior. And I want to make sure I get, it's Endag Muldrew. Is that correct?
Yep, that's it.
Oh, wow. Hey, I'm really good. And you are... One in a row here. Hey, you are a professor of Ojibwe language at the program of Metro State University. And I would love to have you talk to our audience about this program and how Metro State's really, you know, getting into the revitalization and culturally appropriate curriculum there. And exciting to hear. Welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Bonjour. Yeah. Nin Andeg, Ink Bijukang Donji, Donjiba, with the Kiwet Nunk. So yeah, I'm a teacher there. I just got hired on this year. Again, it's a sessional. And it's exciting to see more and more. I've been teaching for a few years already, and it's exciting to see the more programs being instituted, especially here in the US. I'm from Canada originally. So it's exciting to see more of these language programs starting, these classes, more people being interested. And so I'm really happy to teach that one class over there at Metro.
Right on. Hey, so what are the students' expectations? What are they going to learn, and what kind of prior knowledge do they need to have to take your course?
Yeah. So how I learned is I didn't grow up really speaking the language. I heard a little bit here and there. I grew up in the city, Winnipeg, kind of similar to Twin Cities, a lot of ways. So I didn't really hear a lot of the language, but then I started going to classes with my grandma. She speaks the language. That's how I learned. That's how I learned how to teach as well. So we always have lots of different backgrounds of people coming into classes. It depends again how they grew up. Sometimes, you know, they hear the language from ceremonies or their grandparents, or sometimes we have foreign students who have never heard it before. So it's always a mix. And so we design it for that whole variety as well. Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine who teaches Lakota Dakota, but of course not the language of Ho-Chunk, which is the people of the sacred voice. That's who Haley and I are. Just throwing that out there. No, just kidding. That he said that if I wanted to learn my language, now there's things to learn. There's statements, phrases, and words. And what he said to me, which I thought was really interesting, is that learn a new word and then never use it in English again. That's a really interesting concept. And I don't know if he does that because he speaks English really, you know, as well as Lakota Dakota. But there's so many different ways, isn't there, to learn this? And I know for me, I'm an old dog, so it's hard for me to learn new tricks. But repetition is how I kind of learned back in the olden days.
Yeah, there's lots of goes into learning a language, and that's kind of a big part of an intro classes is learning those skills, like learning how to fish, and so then you can go on your own journey or with other people to learn on your own or in different ways. So I feel like my English has gotten worse. So maybe there's some truth in that. I feel like I forget a lot of English words now. But
that's really cool. Well, when you start dreaming in Ojibwe, that's when the cycle is completed. Hoa.
Mm-hmm. Aimdeg, I have a question for you. How did you go about learning Ojibwe, or when was your first time learning the Ojibwe language?
Yeah, so like I said, didn't grow up speaking. That's kind of, again, similar. A lot of families where that was a cutoff. My dad's generation didn't pick up the language for a number of different reasons. So I didn't hear it. Then my kokum, again, my grandma, who teaches the language, she just decided that she was going to teach me. She didn't kind of overcame some of the blocks that she had at that time. So that's how I started. She had different language programs, so I kind of went along as a kid. I was homeschooled, so I kind of was lucky to I could go to these kind of things during the day. So that's how I started learning. And then there was a lot of great, there's actually programs down here in the States she took me to as well. There was immersion. One of them is in Fond du Lac there. So then I started picking up that from immersion as my other main way I got good speaking. Yeah.
Well, we know, a good question, Haley, and we know that there's a big reason why we need to have language revitalization, and I would like you to hit on those points. I know for us, COVID hit Ho-Chunk's really hard, and I think we're down to 70 intimate speakers.
30.
30?
30.
30 intimate speakers?
In Ho-Chunk, yes.
So, if you mind listing the reasons why it's so important for our natives to have their language.
Yeah. Like you said, it's the language that the old people, spoke, and that all that knowledge and stories and all that stuff is bound up in the language. And a lot of the things that happened since with colonization is tried to cut those things off. Those one of the things they tried to take away, right? So that's how I think about it, is where those are the important things we want to bring back and to preserve. And so it's sad to see, when people pass away, those teachers, those are the teachers. So there's a lot of value in learning the language and all the things that come along with it. Mm-hmm. I also see it as like a healing process. Like, again, that's why my dad didn't learn. The people of that generation, my grandma's generation, they didn't value the language, right? They thought it was better to forget that. Or so and that goes along with identity and all these other things that are part of language. So I see it as a healing thing to learn your language, to speak the language with people, because it's not just knowledge, it's using it with people.
Right. Yeah, there's certain sounds that trigger our DNA, whether it's a drum or the words or the sky or an animal or an eagle or many things. I want to ask you real quick about if people out there want to enroll in these courses, how do they learn more? Who do they how do I take a class?
People at Metro State were saying to check out, there's some open houses going on this week. So if you look at their website, there's open houses. So hopefully this program at Metro State again continues with more classes and builds up to something more. There's other programs in Minnesota here in Wisconsin also with language. And I know there's also different those are in university, I should say, tribal colleges as well. And there should also be other community groups that also have classes. That's been the upside of COVID and Zoom and everything, is there's been more of that. But mm-hmm. there's also lots of in-person programs too.
So with Metro State, if I took your class, would that count towards my bachelor's degree?
I'm sure it is. I'm not, again, I'm new hire, so I'm not totally sure on everything, but every time I've taught Anishinaabe language and other Ojibwe language in other places, it has been, so I'm sure it is.
Well, I know too, by being a former high school teacher in a native segment, a big native segment of our population went to that school, that not only if you are working on being proficient with the language, you can teach the language in school, you know, up to a certain point. So that's always good to have on your college transcripts, I believe, so you can move forward and get a signature for somebody that you can teach, you know, at least beginning Ojibwe or Lakota, Dakota or Ho-Chunk or something in the school. So I think it's pretty valuable.
Definitely, yeah. And then there's lots of exciting things going on with, immersion schools and different programs here. Like Wado Kadading was is the older one that's been around for a while now. But yeah, that's the biggest bottleneck is finding teachers for these programs here in the States and Canada as well. Any teaching experience or language experience you get is really sought after right now.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think there's a big renaissance here for our young ones, our Gen Zs that are really getting back to culture after at least a couple generations of losing our culture and our language. So we should continue this conversation about Ojibwe language at Metro State University here in St. Paul. Let's talk a little bit more, and we're here with Ndeg Muldrew, and we're going to be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Getting bus and train information in your language just got easier. Customers who call Metro Transit at 612-373-3333 are able to select language options at the start of the call. Access Next Trip, their automated real-time schedule information tool and other Metro Transit assistance by calling 612-373-3333. For more information about other transit informational tools, visit metrotransit.org/tools.
Back to school season is here. And while this is an exciting time for parents, kids, and educators, let's not forget how far we've come in our battle against COVID-19. We're in a better place, but COVID-19 is still here, and we need to continue to help protect our communities. With the flurry of new schedules and classrooms, let's not overlook the fundamentals of staying safe. Wash your hands regularly and watch for any symptoms like fever, chills, a cough, or shortness of breath. Should you or someone you know have COVID-19 symptoms, stay home and get tested. Find more tips on continuing to be safe at health.state.mn.us. Let's have this back-to-school season be a time of renewed commitment to our collective health and brighter future for our Native communities. Again, find more tips on continuing to be safe at health.state.mn.us.
This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! Hey, good one, Haley. Hey, we're here with Endeg Muldrew, and he's a professor at Metro State University and teaching the Ojibwe language as a course there. And I also got a red alert that it does count towards a bachelor's degree at Metro State. There it is. That's exciting, and we all need to learn languages. And I know, like in high school too, whenever they learned Ojibwe, or that went towards their language too. So that makes total sense. So, what are the barriers that you feel like that we can overcome by taking a course, and I guess learning how to learn a language that's so different for some people that it is a different language. What are some of the tricks of the trade that you have out there?
Yeah. Well, ideally, you know, learning a language you learn as a kid. That's the trick. That's the real trick. Then it's not any work. You're just naturally sitting there. But yeah, for us adults, once we've passed that point, you know, we gotta learn in a classroom, and that it's can be hard, because you're gonna kind of sound like a baby at times. That's kind of the biggest one of the biggest hurdles is making mistakes and being okay with making mistakes.
I gotta tell you something. That's so funny that you said that, because I remember years ago I was like able to introduce myself in Ho-Chunk. It's Ahu Ho-Chunk Raja Wakunja Hade, which means I'm Ho-Chunk and my name's Distant Thunder. And I said that to a speaker, and he said, "Oh, that's good, but you sound like a little baby." When you said that, I just had to laugh. It brought me back there. But yeah, I mean, you got to start somewhere. And he wasn't being critical. I thought it was kind of sweet the way he said that. But I think too, you know, what's really awesome about Metro State and this course is, like, I think you have a lot of different learners, adult learners going to Metro State too. And to get back in the swing of school and, you know, get your degree, if it's first time completing your degree, come back, especially our native people out there, take this course and get back in the swing of things. And it'd be even cooler if you knew some Ojibwe, but you don't have to know any Ojibwe, but if you want a desire, and then come back to school and get your degree.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see the role of universities here, is to serve, yeah, the urban population. These people, you know, maybe you heard it as a kid growing up, or maybe you didn't. Maybe you grew up here all your life, so it's hard to find a place, people to speak with. And so that's the advantage of these university courses, is doing that. And then you also get more skills there later on if you want to teach or work with the language that way too. That's what I always like about classes, is yeah, there's an age range. It's kind of, it seems unnatural to me when it's all people the same age, the same year. So that's what I like about Metro and other places. Yeah, there's a big variety. Bring some food. Yeah,
somebody can bring food, right? Older people that can cook can bring it to us young ones. Oh, wait, I'm not a young one anymore. But you know what I mean. And you get a diverse perspective, too, with age, different age in the classes. And I think that's one of the things Metro State's really been good at for quite a few years, is bringing back people that may not be done with their degrees or want to start in the degrees, that are older, and it's built, there's a lot of courses and a lot of degrees that are built for that kind of learner. So
yeah,
that's how
people, we have in their class right now is like a graduate student. We got some people auditing. Yeah. There's lots, all sorts. Yeah. People there right now, international students. So,
right. And then let's talk about the class one more time here before we let you go, because I think it's really important. How can we contact Metro State to take the Ojibwe class, and when it's coming up next, work it in your schedule? I guess the best way would be to go to metrostate.com or .org and make it happen.
Yeah, I think it's .edu. I think it's the address, but yeah, I'm sure if you Google it, it'll show up there. Yeah, currently it's the 101 we're doing right now, and then next semester in the spring semester we'll be looking to get a second section on that. And so going forward, getting this started again, hopefully we'll get that again going every year, every fall, starting off with the intro and then continuing that.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to have you. We have Endeg Muldrew, professor of the Ojibwe language program at Metro State University here in St. Paul. Let's check out the course, take the class, jump back into school, or like you said, somebody in a master's program, tuning up on their Ojibwe and learning more, and really helps the brain and the soul to learn language, and especially our sacred Ojibwe. So I want to say thank you for stopping in tonight.
You betcha. Thank you.
Any last words before we let you go?
Yeah, I just wanted to say for people listening, yeah, it's never too late to start. Any little bit you use, I always see that as a big win. When you're saying Anin or Bojo to someone on the street, you know, it's never too late to start. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll probably get you on again here and talk about maybe just before people signing up for their next round of classes to give your class a try and Metro State especially.
I'll save a seat for you. Yeah.
Right on. Hey, thanks for coming in, and have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Right on. Wow, Haley, that was awesome. Revitalizing the language, Metro State here in St. Paul. Ojibwe class with this young professor, and many ways to learn. And I think a lot of people, I know I went back to school and I went back to the U and I was older, and it was really fun having different age groups in there. And Metro State's really, really known for that and the degrees. So it was really good to have this young language warrior on and talk about that, and right in our backyard here.
Exactly. Yeah. And when we talk about going back to school, and like you said, is this a requirement for, you know, maybe a degree or something? I know a lot of places like the U of M require a second language requirement, mm-hmm. which is something I really, really struggled with myself when I was at school, like seriously to the point where I had to go in front of the board and say, I seriously cannot for the life of me learn a second language. And you know what they ended up doing was giving me the option to take cultural courses, and mm-hmm. from there, that's when I actually took like six different courses about Native Americans here in the U.S.
yeah,
and Turtle Island.
Right on. And yeah, so we do know language is really important, and we are no longer a tribe if we have no speakers. And that's the short end of that statement. You know, it's like we have to be who we are, and language is so important, if not most important. And we've had generations lose that. But I really feel like there is a revitalization in Metro States. Sounds like they understand that, and they have a young Ojibwe professor there working with them. And so it's exciting, and things are looking good in the future, I think.
Yeah, big Pinagigi Ondeg for carrying on the language of Ojibwe and teaching the next generations. Big Pinagigi to everyone who's revitalizing language.
Yeah, and to those who are learning their language and their ways and coming back to their people, that's huge. And don't ever let anyone discourage you. Come back. We're all here. It's the circle. The medicine wheel, and we talk about that a lot. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for...
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Haller House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the
wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap.